Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Have you been scared, shaking, and hesitating on the edge of starting your own business? It's time to jump in. It's time to find your maniacs, and I have created 1,000 Maniacs specifically for you. I will show you exactly how I went from 0 to 1,000 email subscribers and turned them into maniacs. Then I will show you exactly how to create and sell your first product with the Tiny Product System. 1,000 Maniacs will teach you everything you need to know about setting up an email list, autoresponders, what to send and when, developing a relationship with your list, and how to create what your maniacs want and then sell it to them. Claim your free roadmap right now. Go to 1000maniacs.com and get on the list to get priority access to the next live webinar. That's 1000maniacs.com. Your maniacs are waiting.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a filmmaker, writer, RVer, and an entrepreneur. After graduating college and taking a traditional office job like he thought he was supposed to do, he realized he wasn't actually happy, and either was his fiance. So they decided to quit their jobs and take a 50-state honeymoon. My guest came up with the idea to travel 50 states and shine a spotlight on people who followed their passion or skill. Out of this trip came the documentary Hourly America. During the past year and a half, he has also worked a different job in all 50 states. On the side, he began building a blog about traveling in an RV, and it quickly became his full-time business with some huge side projects on his plate. Now, let's hack. Heath Padgett. Today's episode of Hack the Entrepreneur is brought to you by Braintree. You can probably think back to that very first dollar you made, and now you're sitting here, and you're probably thinking about trying to make that billionth. But have you found the right payments partner to grow with you? Braintree lets you accept every way to pay, from PayPal to Apple Pay and everything in between. All it takes is one integration, and it doesn't matter what currency your customers use, because Braintree lets you accept over 130 of them. To learn more about how your company can grow with Braintree, visit BraintreePayments.com/hack. That's BraintreePayments.com/hack.
We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Heath, welcome to the show.
What's up, John?
Not much, man. I kind of wish I was living your life right now.
It seems more glamorous than it really is.
Yeah, I guess that's how it is. All right, Heath, let's jump into this. Heath, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I would probably say leaving guaranteed opportunities for the unknown. I mean, I kind of created this habit when I was in college, but I had my very first internship with a good company. It was a technology company in Austin, and I had gotten the job straight from the CEO, and there's probably 150 employees. And so it wasn't a really small company. And he was even mentoring me, and he was a good guy, baby boomer. But I ended up just doing a bunch of menial work. I was making copies, and I'm all about, you know, working your way up, doing what needs to be done to get experience to a certain extent. But I just had this really strong feeling that I couldn't shake, that I was wasting my life and this wasn't where I was supposed to be. And as silly as it sounded, at I guess 21 I was at the time, I basically had this thought that, hey, if I sit here and settle for this, I will always settle when I'm in the situation. And so I just kind of made it a point to not do that. And I quit that job. And I had been working on a clothing line at the time when I was in college. And it didn't take off. I basically called my parents, told them I was dropping out of college. It was after my junior year, so I only had one more year left. And then I was moving to California, and then I was going to make it on my own. My mom didn't talk to me for a month. I basically went out there and fell flat on my butt, ran out of money, nothing took off. Couldn't even get a job at a Skechers I applied for in Manhattan Beach in California. Kind of had to come back home with my tail in between my legs. Went back to college. But I realized, I think during that time, just the resilience that you can have to bounce back, especially when you're young and you don't have family and a lot of, you know, obligations at that point. And so after I graduated from college, I had the same exact situation come up. I was 9 months into a software sales job, and I had this idea to go and spend some time traveling around the country, but I wanted to do it in a better way this time. I didn't want to just jump out because I hated it, but I actually kind of planned my route out, if you could say that, where my wife and I were about to get married. We were fiancé at the time, and came up with this idea to go and travel around the country and do this creative project that, even if it failed, would better me in so many different ways. And that's exactly what we did. So I think that just that ability to leave the known for the unknown. And there's been several other circumstances where that has continued to pop up in my life. And it's just been a habit that I've created. And it's scary every time, but I think it gets a little easier.
It does get easier, I think, but it doesn't get easy. I think it would lose its charm if it did.
Right.
So you had a clothing line back when you were before college, did you say? Or in college you started?
It was in college. So I played college baseball and I basically was trying to start a sporting apparel line. And I was a freshman and I wanted to play professional baseball. And I started reading business books. I think one of the first ones I read was Losing My Virginity by Richard Branson. And it was back before I really knew that much about Amazon. And so I was just having to go to all these bookstores and ask them if they had a book called Losing My Virginity. And it was really fun. But basically, I just started getting into and reading these books from entrepreneurs and realizing, hey, these guys are living a really cool life. You know, playing professional baseball sounds cool, but being able to create a business that allows myself to do whatever I want is really intriguing. And so it ended up shifting into just more of a t-shirt company that I created. And I was selling to a lot of my friends in my college and I was wearing around t-shirts. And we kind of had a social element too, where there was a massive forest fire that hit Central Texas. Over 1,600 homes got burnt down. And so I organized well over 100 volunteers and we went down there and kind of used some of the profits from that clothing company to raise support and clean yards from homes and things like that. It was super meaningful. But yeah, that was kind of my first taste. It never took off and never became profitable. But I do remember going to a baseball game and we were on a flight to Oregon and I had just launched my e-commerce site and I basically got off the plane and I had a few emails that went off and they were orders. And it was the first time in my life I had made money when I wasn't actively working. And I think I was hooked at that point. And I still have, I'm itching still to get back into a more of a products because I'm doing a lot of service-based business right now with clients. But I think I was hooked at that moment to realize, hey, I can make money when I'm not actively working. It was just, it's hard to explain, but I was giddy.
It's hard to explain if you haven't experienced it. Once you've experienced it, it makes sense. So it's interesting, like how far, it seems like you've been, looking back, it seems like you've been kind of this entrepreneurial spirit for most of your life. Like, it's just like, I'm going to just start a t-shirt company. Like, most people go through their life and never start a t-shirt company, right? You just kind of on a whim do it. Do you feel that the further and the longer that you play this sort of game of just sort of finding your own work, creating your own stuff, even if it's a service-based business and traveling around the country doing it, the longer you do this, do you see yourself sort of becoming further and further sort of unemployable, if you will?
I would say yes. I'm not a guy that's too prideful to say that if I ever needed to get a job to support my wife that I wouldn't, because I totally would. I mean, I think you'd be crazy to say that you would never do that. So I'm always hesitant to say I'd never, because then I always end up doing it. So I just don't want to have to ever do that. But to a certain extent, yes. After we got back from Hourly America, and I'm not sure how much you'll touch on this before, you know, kind of in the intro of the podcast, but basically I traveled around the country. I worked a different job in every state for a documentary my wife and I filmed called Hourly America. It's about hourly work across the country. And I basically was able to segue out of that into doing part of what I'm doing now, which is film and video work. And we've filmed large conferences like TEDx and World Domination Summit, been a part of those media teams. And then I've just worked on filming a lot of online educational content for authors and bloggers and people like that. And that's just been kind of what we've been doing since we got back a year and a half ago, amongst other things like speaking and just kind of the random projects that have come in. But anyway, gosh, I totally forgot. What was even the question right there that we were talking about?
About the longer you spend in this.
Oh, unemployable. Yeah. So going back to kind of leaving the known for the unknown was I had a guy named Jia Zhang who has a book out called Rejection Proof, who was a mentor of mine and basically hired me while we were finishing up our hourly America trip, which was great because we didn't have a ton of income at the time, to help him plan out a book tour and launch his book and help him build an online course that he was going to launch around the idea of rejection, because he has a cool YouTube video series that went viral called 100 Days of Rejection, which is about basically gamifying rejection to get over the fear of, in his case, starting a business. And so it was a cool project, and I looked up to him, and I had never launched a book before, but I thought, why not? Let's give it a shot. So I'd worked with Jia for almost a year, and I basically was really hesitant. I had a lot of anxiety over committing to somebody for a certain period of time. And I basically said, hey, look, I'll stick with you through this book launch, through these key deliverables. But after that, you know, I'm not guaranteeing anything. And he was cool with that. And I was fine with, you know, being able to say there's a clear exit point, because I did literally have anxiety about sticking on for longer, because I felt like it's so easy to be able to get a paycheck and stay comfortable and help support other people versus digging into my own stuff. And so basically, we launched the book, we did a tour, we did 25 states. It was awesome. And the book didn't hit the New York Times bestsellers list or anything, but you know, it was our first go at it. And I felt that confident we put a lot of great work into it. And I felt good about what we did. And then afterwards, he wanted me to be a part of building up the consulting business that he had done. And he has been hired to speak at lots of different companies. I mean, Google, he went to Stanford and Yale and lots of really reputable companies that he has spoken at. And it was a great opportunity when me as be his business partner. And I ultimately said that I didn't want to, even though I was tempted, because it was, you know, guaranteed job and guaranteed project to work on, because I wanted to do my own thing. And that was in the fall of last year. And basically, I didn't have a lot of opportunity coming in at the time, but I had some things that I thought I could be pursuing. And I was trying to build up some momentum with other clients that, you know, I wouldn't have to be working on full time, because ultimately that was kind of a job, even though looking back, it was kind of a client relationship. And so I basically jumped out of that, and we found a couple other clients almost immediately. And within a month, there had been a story that went out on CBS Evening News about our story during primetime. And a lady called me about a speaking opportunity, and that ended up spinning out. And in the past few months, I did like 10 speaking gigs in the past several months. And then they started paying about $2,500 per speaking opportunity with companies like Chick-fil-A. I spoke at UPS, basically around hiring hourly employees in the millennial group. And I don't see this as really a long-term thing. This is just because I did Hourly America, and it's kind of a hot topic right now. But anyway, it's kind of, you know, we've been able to continue doing our own thing and have so much more time over the past several months than I would have had, you know, had I stayed doing what I was doing at that time. And it only happened because I was able to, you know, be unemployable, I guess you could say.
Yeah. And like being confident, leaving the known for the unknown. So at the beginning, you even say that your one thing basically is that, like the idea of like giving up those guaranteed and known opportunities for less guaranteed and kind of being comfortable, being uncomfortable. So that's awesome. And that's probably the essential part of your business, but there's obviously lots more to it. And every expert now, Heath, talks about this 80-20 rule in business, right? Do 20% of the work, get 80% of the results. You're supposed to do what you're good at, and you're supposed to delegate the rest. Heath, can you tell me something that you are absolutely not good at in your business?
I'm not great at project management, and even, you know, a lot of the deliverables for clients, as far as on a week-to-week basis, my wife Alyssa and I, we're a team, we work together, and she's so much better at promptly responding to emails and knocking off action to-do lists for our clients than I am. She really has to push me on that. And part of that probably stems from being a bad employee because it's, you know, and I say that, and we do a great job for the people we work with, and we, you know, always show up and do what we need to get done. But that's a struggle for me. I mean, it's not a struggle for me to record podcasts on the RV Entrepreneur, the podcast I launched a couple months ago. It's not a struggle for me to show up and write blogs or work on my new business concept that I'm working with on a developer friend of mine. And it's those things come pretty easily to me. And also putting together just, I guess you could call them deals, not to sound like Donald Trump or anything like that, but just like, you know, the art of the deal, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, it's just like, you know, like bringing together opportunities to create something that betters both our business and others as well. That's something that is more of a skill, I'd say. But the other part, not so much.
Yeah, that's funny because when you first answered it, it was like, but that's what you're doing. That's what you're getting paid to do. But now as you explain it, basically, yeah, you have that entrepreneurial sort of mind where you can make the deal and get it sort of rolling, and then you don't want to deal with like the day-to-day necessarily of it always after the fact.
Right. And I know that sounds really weird, but it's like my wife and I, we're yin and yang. Like we work together really well, and I pulled on all of our clients and I work with them, and we have weekly meetings and we hit all of our due dates and things like that. I just need to be, Alyssa manages me basically to make sure that I'm getting done what I need to get done because I just need help with that.
Yeah, which is great. And it's great to have, you wouldn't be nearly doing as well if you and your wife were the exact same, exactly like you. It would just be, wouldn't work, right? So it works really well. It's like any partnership, you should have the differences because that's what pushes you through.
Absolutely.
So let's move to projects, Heath, because you've mentioned this new project with the developer that you're thinking of. And at the beginning or earlier on, you sort of alluded to how you'd love to get back into like product, right? So you can kind of make money when you're not actively doing stuff. So projects can be a loose term. We can talk about one of those specifically if you wish, or just the general idea of it. But I would love to know right now, Heath, how you and your wife, and whether it's a written process or just an internal process you go through, but when an idea for a new project comes across your plate or through your head, how do you decide right now whether it is worth your time, energy, and resources?
It's a really good point. So I guess I can just use a couple of practical examples. So I started a blog a couple of years ago called heathpadgett.com. It was kind of a personal blog that I was going to use to, you know, hone my craft of writing, but I wasn't sure where I wanted to take it. Then we started Hourly America, and I was working at different jobs across the country as kind of an experiment to figure out, you know, what I wanted to do, but also it was just a kind of a self-growth process, you could call it. And so I thought maybe I'd write a lot about work and things like that. But I ended up, you know, we traveled around in an RV. And so I ended up just kind of posting some blogs every now and then again about, you know, how I felt like living in a small space and giving up a lot of material comforts was helping me grow. And then last year we used it to pay off over 14 grand of student debt. And I ended up writing a lot about RVs. And I know that sounds strange because a lot of people hearing this may think that it's just retirees and things like that. But there's a whole movement of people who are out there living in RVs who are young and very tech savvy and starting really cool businesses that they're running remotely from anywhere. And so I say that to say, I'd been wanting to start a podcast for a very long time. And ultimately, I pushed it back for a couple years because I knew that I needed to first become good enough as a writer and consistently show up enough as a writer before I tried to add something on top of that. And so it took me a couple years of knowing I desperately wanted to start one, annoying my wife, Alyssa, all the time because I was talked about starting one, ultimately to the point where I felt like, hey, I can start one now and not drop the ball on other things. And so that was one scenario on how I kind of handled a new project that I knew I wanted to take on. There's been a million different books that I've thought about wanting to write over the past couple of years, whether it be interviews that I did during Hourly America. I did over 100 interviews with hourly employees that I thought were just really cool stories. And there's a book called Working by Studs Terkel written in the 70s, kind of similar to just interviewing, quote unquote, the everyday working man about, you know, their life and or, you know, writing a book on just living an unconventional life or something like that. You know, all these different kind of ideas that I've had for books. And a lot of those are on the back burner just because I feel like I need to get to a certain point in my life where I can be somebody who can talk about that because I'll just say, look at what I've done. These are what I've learned and people would value that instead of writing the book to become that person, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. And when you decide on like a new project, like a podcast, say, do you set up then sort of in your head again, or is it written, but like metrics for of quote unquote success for them or worthiness of continuing the effort? Like, is there something you're going to look for a bounce back of analytics or feedback or metrics in 1 month, 2 months, 6 months and be like, Is this worth the effort or not?
Totally. So going into the podcast, one of the key reasons why I wanted to do it was because I wanted to increase my reach on my traffic on my website. And I looked at a lot of people who, you know, had popular blogs, and in almost every case, they had at least two different media streams coming in, whether it be a blog and a book or a blog and a podcast or a blog and a YouTube channel. And so I just looked at my website and I said, oh, I've only got the blog, so I need to diversify. So the idea was that I hit 50,000 visitors a month on my podcast or on my blog by the end of the year, and then my podcast would help generate people coming in from that. And then I basically wrote down the amount of episodes I was willing to give myself as a runway. And this was kind of something that I worked on as a concept. And it's nothing new, but Jia Zhang and I talked about a lot about this idea of emotional runway and how long you're willing to do something before you're, you know, there's the financial runway, how much money do you have to fund it? There's the time runway, how long would you like to be doing that? And then there's the emotional runway, which are basically how many no's are you willing to go through in order to succeed? And in the podcast, it was kind of, how many episodes am I willing to do before I'm willing to basically pack it in because it's not working? And I gave myself 50. And if I don't, during that time, hit certain metrics, like, am I enjoying it? And I don't have specific numbers. I mean, I said the 50,000, but I think even if I wasn't up there, then I might still keep going because the response I've gotten so far has been really well. And I've actually doubled my web traffic since December to March, consistently going up, not just a spike. So I think so far it's going really well, and I'll keep continuing it. But I do have that number in 50 because then I can try something else if I don't feel like it's working. And it might just be more of a feeling at that point than a metric. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, which is totally fine. I mean, and 50 is, I mean, at one a week, that's almost a year. So it's not like you're like, well, I'll try it for the next 3 weeks and see if it doesn't work, because it's not going to work. And then you're just going to be, well, podcasting doesn't work for me. Well,
right.
Really, dude? Come on.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that it's awesome too, because looking at projects to take on, I think that it's hard to lose if you can have growth in the process. Like, you have Hacked the Entrepreneur podcast. And so even if nobody is out there listening, which I know there are people listening, but even if there wasn't, then you still get to talk to people each week who are going to push your knowledge base in some form or fashion.
Full disclosure, Heath, I completely started this selfishly, seriously, from my city, like almost 2 years ago. I had a summer off of my business and I was like, I want to talk to these 30. And I literally had this list I wrote of 30 smart people. And I thought I would just do that and then kind of carry on with my business. And it kind of spiraled out of control. But
it's awesome.
You're right, man. It's totally like there is growth out of these no matter what. And you should, like an education in college. I mean, you can get educations out of anything, failure or not.
Yeah. And I look at a lot of, and I see kind of a new, I guess, movement among people who are podcasters and bloggers. And it's not going to be the case for everyone. It's less than 1% probably. But you see people moving into becoming, you know, media content providers and entrepreneurs who are running really large companies, and even maybe starting from blogs or YouTube channels or podcasts, and basically just niching down and serving that audience really well because they're already built them up. They really like them. And what better person to, you know, serve a specific market than those people? Like I have a friend named Nathan Barry who has a service called ConvertKit. And Nathan started as a software developer, designer, and he wrote a couple books on designing iPhone apps that he had done that did well. And then he wrote a book called Authority. And then, you know, built up an audience around people who are in the space that we're in right now with blogging and podcasting and marketing and stuff like that, and created a better version of MailChimp. And they're killing it. I mean, he's got like 15, 20 employees doing like 150,000 a month. Growing like crazy. Pat Flynn's on there using it. A lot of big name bloggers like Zen Habits. And but anyway, he started as a podcaster. So I think there's going to be a lot more people who go from starting blogs and podcasts to, you know, starting really large companies and vice versa.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with Authority in his book, Nathan, I mean, it's build that sort of audience and that authority and then build a product around that. And you have this baseline to start from. And Nathan's awesome, and so is ConvertKit.
Yeah.
Obviously. So I need to ask you, what would be, say, one of the biggest hurdles, like business hurdles, to living out of an RV, especially podcasting?
Wi-Fi, totally. That's the number one. It's Wi-Fi is hard because we stay at RV parks a lot and sometimes state campgrounds and things like that. And so I've had to overcome figuring out, because we only have 20 gigs of data a month, and we did Hourly America, we had 8 gigs of data, which for most people doesn't sound like a lot, but that's all of our gigs of data, like our Wi-Fi for our internet, everything. So imagine, you know, if you knew how much you tethered streaming Skype interviews and things like this at your home, most people use like hundreds, or, you know, at their house if they're streaming Netflix or whatever. So we've just had to figure that component out, and it's been difficult, but we've learned along the way. I've been to a lot of coffee shops and things like that. So,
but you record straight from your RV?
Yep. Yeah. So record straight from the RV.
And see, now you're making me feel guilty. Like we should cut this short.
No.
We're using,
I'm actually today, I'm at my in-law's house in Texas, and I'm on good Wi-Fi, which is why you can hear me.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because it sounds excellent. And yeah, I thought that would be a huge hurdle. Yeah,
and honestly, though, people have been really cool about it. I mean, I launched the podcast in mid to late February. And it's I don't know how many weeks it's been, 6 or 7, maybe a little bit longer than that. But it's gotten, I don't know what good metrics are for a podcast, but I've gotten like 10,000 downloads and already had my first paid sponsor for the podcast, which is exciting because it took a really long time to get any money from my blog. And you know, in the first basically month and a half, I've already had a company that's willing to sponsor a couple episodes for what me is a lot at $500. And so I was basically giddy as all get out because I'm like, hey, this, I wasn't not expecting to be making any type of income from this, to be totally honest. And now I'm like, hey, I need to get some more sponsors.
That's awesome. Like, and it's irrelevant of what like is quote unquote good for a podcast, but 10,000 people downloading your show. Come on, man. It's like insane, isn't it?
Yeah, it's awesome.
And it's from your RV.
It's super niche too. You know, it's people who are living in RVs, starting businesses from the road, and not just, you know, some of these people are, you know, obviously doing what you think they'd be doing, like freelance web development. But the last couple episodes, last three episodes, they've all been people who, one guy's name is Kevin Halesh, and he has an app company called Moment. He has an app called Moment. It's been on the Tim Ferriss show, Lifehacker. It's got over 2.5 million downloads. Last week, I had a guy, his name's Christian Jenko. He's got a really popular TEDx talk on why you should learn to code. And he has a couple companies. One's called DBinBox, which is it integrates with Dropbox, and people can easily share unlimited large files. Anyway, so the point is, some of these, it's a really niche audience, and a lot of these people are doing really cool stuff all from their RV.
Yeah, and you would think on the surface that a niche audience is going to make it harder to get sponsors and harder to get audience, but actually it's usually better because sponsors know what they're getting. They know exactly who they're getting now.
Very targeted, right? Yeah, totally. Yeah,
that's awesome. All right, Heath, this has been totally a blast, man. I want to wrap up on one final question for you. So it's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. So you are very, very early in your career, yet you've accomplished and done many things up till now. So the idea is that as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, we are constantly projecting our success into the future. So when you hit that metric in 1 month, or when you get to release that book in 1 year, or when you get to stand on the stage in 6 months, you will be successful. Yet the moment before you hit that goal, you're going to set 5 bigger, loftier ones into the future. I fully agree. We have to continually push ourselves and kind of move forward. But like the horizon, as you walk towards it, it continually gets further away. And from the outside, we look super successful. But from ourselves, we always seem to, success is next. It's up there. So living in this gap sometimes, I would like it right now, Heath, if you could stop and turn around and look behind you. Everything you've done up till now, the highs, the lows, the wins, the losses, but tell me how you feel about your entrepreneurial sort of journey up until today.
I feel like I could be making more money, to be honest, but at the same time, I'm proud of myself for making hard, tough decisions early on in my career and not settling. I think that is what I feel right now about my career, because no matter what's happened or what's to come, I haven't settled, and I don't think I would change a damn thing, because I'm proud of myself for making hard decisions when I didn't have a lot of the support from external people, you know, friends and family and things like that. So, you know, we'll see what happens from here. But up until this point, I feel like I've made a lot of right decisions while they might have seemed crazy at the time.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, wouldn't change a damn thing. That's awesome. That's how to end. So we've got to talk about your business in passing, Heath. Could we specifically right now, could you specifically tell the listener where to find out more about you and your blog and your podcast and anything else you'd like?
Yeah, the name of the podcast is The RV Entrepreneur. You can find it in iTunes, Stitcher, and all the places where your podcast probably is. And my blog is heathpaget.com. Heath, like the candy bar, P-A-D-G-E-T-T.com. And you could find all the information about Hourly America and my blog and all that good stuff there.
Awesome, man. Awesome. I will link to that in the show notes for you once you stop driving around or riding a train or working out, whatever it is you do. Heathpaget.com. The RV Entrepreneur podcast will be linked there. I'm going to find that YouTube series on 100 Days of Rejection, Losing My Virginity, NathanBerry.com with ConvertKit, which I use on this show as well. And Heath Paget, at Heath Paget, I believe, on Twitter.
Yep.
Excellent. We will link to all of those in the show notes for you. So Heath, thank you again, man, so much for taking the time to stop by. And please just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Thank you, John.
Well, that was a lot of fun. Thank you so much, Heath, and thank you for being out there listening. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. So I discovered Heath, I can't even remember how. I was reading an article, I think on Chris Guillebeau's website, and I came across Heath, and I loved the story. And I have to say I have kind of a personal connection, I guess, to RVing. RVing seems like such an old person, retired sport, and it's... My wife and I actually did it. We got an old RV quite a few years ago now, but we took off for 3 months and we drove. We were living in Vancouver on the west coast of Canada at the time, and we just drove it down all the way to the Baja Peninsula of Mexico and lived there and tried to learn how to surf and stuff. And so I kind of fell in love with it at the time, although I haven't done it since. But when I saw Heath's story, it really struck a chord with me. And now he's building a business so that he can continue to just endlessly do this. It's pretty awesome, I have to say. So it was really, really cool to get to talk to Heath, smart, bright guy with some really cool things coming up. He's already done some really cool stuff and he's got some really impressive projects coming up, as you heard us discuss. But I came to the point where I had to go back to the conversation and pull something out that just sort of stood out to me. So I went back. And there was a whole bunch of things he said. And then I went back again, and I went back again, and then I went back again. And that final time I went through, there was this one thing that Heath said that was so clear to me when I heard it back that I just knew it was that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
But anyway, he started as a podcaster. So I think there's going to be a lot more people who go from starting blogs and podcasts to, you know, starting really large companies and vice versa.
And that's the hack. Heath, Heath, Heath. This is so short. Sorry, like the way you said he started as a podcast at the beginning, sorry to cut into you like that there, but this is really true. And he was talking about Nathan Berry, and now ConvertKit has come out of that, which is a massive business. But this is so true. This reminds me of a quote from the infamous Seth Godin that says, "Don't find customers for your products, find products for your customers." This is the exact same thing that Heath is talking about, and I love this. This is building your audience through something that's a lot easier than coming up with a brilliant business idea and going through the whole process of creating a product and then realizing you don't have customers for said product. Find the customers, build an audience. No matter if it's from scratch, I built my audience completely from scratch when I started Hack the Entrepreneur. And then you can create products that those people want. It's so much easier because you have people that now will tell you, and you can ask, and you can just determine by talking to people what it is they want. Don't find customers for your products, find products for your customers. And I absolutely 100% agree with you, Heath, that more and more people are going to build blogs and they're going to build podcasts. They're going to build YouTube channels. They're going to build Snapchat platforms with lots of people around them. And then products are going to come out of this. Products and businesses that do really, really, really well. If you're thinking about product before customers, think about changing your mindset. Think about thinking the way Heath says it, because it really, truly does work. And I thank you for that, Heath. That was a lot of fun. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the website. If you haven't yet, I would love a rating and review. It would help the show so much. HackTheEntrepreneur.com/review. If you're on an Apple device, it will take you right to the page where you can leave a rating and review. Literally will take you 2 minutes and 32 seconds. HackTheEntrepreneur.com/review. I'll wait. All right. So make sure you stop by the site, check out Heath's show notes and HeathPaget.com. The RV Entrepreneur is his podcast. Make sure you check that out as well. He's going to be talking to other people running businesses while traveling in RVs and other people just really following their passion or their skill. And then I'm also going to link to NathanBerry.com, the book Losing My Virginity and 100 Days of Rejection. So it's been a blast. I thank you so much for stopping by. I really, truly do appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.